The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A short week with mixed markets. The Mueller report is out with mixed results. Earnings season results are in. Also mixed. Passover, Good Friday, and Easter. And some context. All this and much more on episode number 608 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz, your host. I want to wish everybody to start a wonderful Passover, a very happy and a healthy Easter. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of my thoughts during the Passover Seder this year, and I'll go through that with you. Yes, you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, where we come together each and every week to talk about things related to the markets and finance, investing, things that really impact and affect our money, and talk about how we can get to be better investors, how we can really accomplish our goals, our financial long-term needs, desires, get to that point in the future where we want to be. And it was an interesting week. We had some of the same drivers that were moving markets once again, except for the fact that, of course, now we are in the midst of earnings season. But we did see that again and again and again and again. We had China deal trade optimism that was all over the place on a regular basis throughout the week. We saw that various people from, well, the administration and all sorts of other areas that are associated with this particular deal coming out saying, yeah, it looks like, yep, it's going to happen. Well, maybe in May, maybe in June, we're going to have more meetings. Things are just moving along just so swell, just so nicely. And that obviously is keeping somewhat of a bid underneath markets right now, because what it's doing is it's constantly putting that same carrot in front of our noses that we've been wanting to see for some time. And now that we are getting closer to a point of some potential resolution, there's the idea that this is going to clean up a lot of the headwinds that are currently in the markets, and that's going to be good. How could that be bad? Maybe we're going to see these tariffs lifted that have caused a shakeup around the world in terms of economic activity and earnings, and now all of a sudden, it's going to be smooth sailing from here. We also had Fed speakers coming out talking down rates throughout the week. Now we have some theory that we may go to an alternative methodology in looking at inflation and how that is going to be impacted by monetary policy by the Fed. And if that is the case, that they may overshoot in good times, which is kind of weird, because in good times, you would think that inflation is picking up. And the fact that they can't get inflation to pick up just tells us the charade. It really brings down to the bottom line of reality that this whole charade of what the Fed is trying to do just doesn't happen. And if we didn't know that, all we had to do is look at what is going on in Japan over the last two decades and how they are hoping against all hope to bring up inflation through extreme measures of monetary policy and how that has failed miserably. I don't think anybody could deny that. But we're going to continue doing it as well, not looking at some of the other important drivers that are really behind the lack of inflation and what may be done to, you know, accomplish the goal that they put on themselves about this 2% inflation, this arbitrary number that's been put on. So that's going on as well. We've seen political outrage and plenty of party line fighting that went on this week as well. And that's definitely going to continue. I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here, that's going to continue, because now we have the Mueller report out. And on one side, you know, you see words like exoneration and absolute sham, and we're going to go and seek retaliation and retribution against all the people that started this. Why did this thing even start in the first place? And on the other side, we're starting to see the word impeachment once again crop up. That while the abstract of this by Attorney General Barr was, hey, you know what? We had no collusion. And, you know, there's really no wrongdoings that we see. And it looks like this whole thing should just be, at this point, shut down, put away. There's no obstruction. There's no anything. The other side, the Democrats, are saying, well, wait a second here. Look at all these things that were mentioned in the Mueller report while they declined to go any further with their findings. They're leaving it to the judicial system and to Congress. Something's here. And it looks like there's some impeachable points. Now, that's what they're saying. I haven't read the whole 400-page report. Most people won't. So now we're just destined to all be dealing with this whole back and forth party line shenanigans that will go on for some time to come, especially due to the fact that we are inching closer towards an election next year. Now, North Korea, you gotta love North Korea. You gotta love some of these players who look for political weakness to do things. North Korea, these issues are once again springing up that they're mobilizing. They potentially are going to do some kind of additional firing of some kind of a missile or rocket or some kind of weapon. And when do they do it? When do they do it? Right before the Mueller investigation is and the report is released. Why? It's a weak point. It's a weak point in the political structure in the United States, and therefore they're going to seize upon that, looking to, kind of on one hand sneak underneath the radar, on the other hand try to cause some more confusion. That's their goal. The idea that President Trump shook hands with the leader of North Korea and had some kind of plan that was going to benefit both countries, North Korea from an economic standpoint and the rest of the world from the lack of North Korea doing what they do in terms of the potential worry about them just recklessly shooting off nuclear missiles and the threats and all that. I think at this point we have to say it was total BS, total bogus. It was a nice photo op. It was an interesting line and kind of a political gesture. But the fact is that North Korea doesn't want to be friends with us. They want nothing to do with us. They'll find and try to seek out the weak point in our political structure and seize upon that. They're going to try to see what they could do for their betterment only. They have no care in the world about anybody else. And finally, last week we saw, of course, European economies continuing to weaken. And this path of weakening that they've been on for some time and the continuation of a slowdown in their overall economic backdrop has been a concern. It's causing a concern for the ECB, the multinationals here, which we're going to see a lot more reporting this week coming, are probably going to be discussing Europe as a key point of where they see some weakness in their guidance moving forward. There was hope that with Mario Draghi coming out with some additional conversation about how he sees a weakening path continuing, that there was going to be some form of additional stimulus. And basically he did it with words, but there's not much action that he could put into play because they're pretty much at the low point of interest rates and at a high point of their quantitative easing. What else can be done? Something new, maybe. Going further negative rates? Oh, yeah, that worked really well. They're going to come up with some other crazy type of monetary policy that may deal with debasing their currency. Well, oh, yeah, that really worked well. Unfortunately, they have to go structurally at this point, and they're going to have to take some hard hits. The banking system in Italy, for example, is not only fragile and frail, it's tearing itself up piece by piece, because they didn't do what we did here, which is really reset the whole banking system and require the banks to have a much better capital base. They just pretty much papered it over with just all sorts of, just throw money at. Let's just throw money at the situation. You know, let's just cover it up, paper it up, and make it look good. It doesn't really have to be good, because that will instill confidence. That's the theory, right? We're going to instill confidence, and then everybody's going to feel a lot better. And when they feel a lot better, things will just get better on their own. Unfortunately, that's not the case. It's not going to be the case. It will not be the case. Never, ever. There needs to be some structural changes in Europe. And now, you know, with the Brexit situation, the fact that you have such a differing manufacturing base in the European Union, it causes an inability, or creates an inability, for them to really come together and make this happen in a way that is cohesive, and the ability to change things dramatically. Nothing's going to change. And when we see that Germany is having PMI prints under 50 towards under 45, contracting at a fast pace like this, one of the greatest manufacturing nations in the world, you have to wonder what's going on and what can be done to solve this, because we're not seeing that any of the methods that have been used by the ECB are really functioning well. And again, they really have no ability to do anything fiscally because of the just the differentials in the underlying economies and the different countries and what they produce, what they do, and how they approach their system. So nothing's going to happen there. Not much is going to be changed. So Passover did start Friday night. It was the first night of Passover. And many of you know this story, and this is the story of the Jewish people's quest for freedom and from a break from their enslavement. There was some, you know, if you haven't participated, there's a lot of really cool stories and lessons that can be taken away from this whole entire component of history. And many of you have seen the movie, right? The Ten Commandments. Charlton Heston. That explains part of the history, and this is taken from the Bible. For those of you that don't know and haven't really experienced Passover, let me tell you a little bit about it. We gather together as a family and friends, and it's part, the usual family gathering with the little infighting and bickering and fun and all that, all the emotions that go with a big family dinner. But what we do on Passover also is we tell the story. We retell the story, and we go through the whole discussion of the Jewish enslavement and Moses leading the Jews through the desert, escaping this slavery, and the Pharaoh and the fight with the Pharaoh of Egypt, and going through the whole process of how he actually negotiated to a degree, and how he used and how God came in and, you know, did all these plagues. And then eventually Pharaoh led the Jews through the desert and went towards the Holy Land, the Promised Land, the land of milk and honey. And during the Seder, there's a storytelling and dinner that goes on. There's a parable that's discussed and told and retold. And it discusses the four children, four types of children. And I've been doing this for, 45, 50 years. And every Passover Seder, there's a book, it's called the Haggadah. And in the Haggadah, there's a story about the four sons, the four children. And in this lesson, there are four types of people. We're going to talk about this a little bit of a different way here. There's four types of people. And the case they're referred to as children. And they're described as this. The wise one. The wicked one. One that's simple. And one that doesn't know how or doesn't know enough to ask. So there's four different personalities. And I was thinking, you know, we all may have some of these in us. And I wanted to relate this to us as investors. For example, the wise one. The wise one, as an investor, again, can be thought of as a person who invests and who does their research and does their homework and takes the time to look at all of the options and make a really good and well-educated and informed decision, right? So this is someone who spends their time maybe looking at balance sheets or technical analysis and looking at the research and looking at the news stories, reading the quarterly listening to quarterly conference calls maybe, or even reading all the quarterly reports that come out. And what happens is that they're going to make this informed decision on how to approach investing in that particular stock or maybe that company or a particular sector, right? They're really doing their work. We'll consider that the wise one. The wicked one, I was thinking, maybe that's like an investor who is looking for an angle. You know, they're looking to angle the whole system. They're looking to figure out a way that they can make out better than everybody else. And they could do something that's, you know, going to help them profit, possibly at the expense of others. Maybe they're pump and dumping. Maybe they're spreading false rumors. Whatever they're doing this in an attempt to profit on bad intel. These are the bad actors in the space of investing. We know who those are. We've seen them before. We understand this. But this is what we'll consider the wicked son, the wicked child. Now, the simple one is interesting. It may be those that don't have the desire to do really any thoughtful research, but just invested along with the crowd. Maybe the simple child is an investor, looks at broad-based ETFs or just simply a very simple broad-based portfolio. And it's going to just go with the flow. I'm investing. I don't want to really understand this. I don't have the capacity to understand this. But you know what? I know that I need to do this. I know that long-term, this is what I want to do. So I'm just going to not really get involved with all the different decision-making and research and analysis and all that. I'm just going to put my money to work, maybe in a diversified portfolio. They're simple, but I don't think this really describes somebody that's maybe stupid or reckless. They're not wicked. They're not looking to get over on anything. They're not looking to, do anything that is kind of crazy. But you know what? At the same time, they realize they don't have the tools, the desire, or the ability. Yet they understand the benefit for their long term. These people, I guess, would be the ones who would spend the time doing what they do best, doing what they know best. They're working at their job, but they're also letting the markets work for them. They're letting their money work for them in a way that can help them long term. Essentially, if you think about it, essentially they're passive investors. That's what they are. They're just letting the markets do their thing. Letting their money simply do what it does. Not having the desire to, or even the need. Better yet, not feeling they don't have the need to understand what's going on, but the understanding that they need to do what they do with investing. All the above, the three we just talked about, right? The wise, the wicked, the simple, they all have their own way of addressing the market, attempting to invest for profits. You may not agree with all of them. You may say that I have some of these inside of me when I think about investing. And each of the methods are different, but they're all involved in some way and look to have their money optimized, working for them the best way possible, even though they may not understand every single component. You know, I think about, for example, you know, most of us drive. You drive to work, you drive to school, you drive to, you know, go on vacation, you're driving. You get in the car, you put the key in the car, you start the car. Do you actually have to know how the engine works and what exactly happens when you put your key in and turn it? Do you need to know all the details about how the ignition then goes to the starter then, well, if you have a combustible engine, you know, then there's gas that flows into the cylinders and the pistons fire and all the different things that go on, or, you know, whatever's happening with your particular vehicle. Or you just get in, push the button, start it, and you're on your way. All you have to know is that the car will get you from place A to B. You don't know how all the wiring works and all the different things about the engine. And when you press the brake, you just know that you press the brake, it stops. You press the gas, it goes. You turn left, it turns left. You turn right, it turns right. You don't need to know all about the belts and the steering mechanisms and all the electronics that are involved and the computers that are everything. No, you're just going to go along with the flow. It's kind of like, you know, that's the simple way to invest, the simple child versus the one that's going to take apart the engine, who's the wise child, versus the wicked, who's going to utilize, for example, maybe higher octane gas and retrofit their engine in their car and maybe use nitrous to boost the speed, et cetera. I mean, just things that are a little bit off. And I use the word wicked. Don't necessarily think that only as bad. Think of as wicked trying to just outsmart. Do what others don't. It may be good, it may be bad, but, you know, it's a different technique, a theory, a different philosophy of doing things. Now, getting back to the simple investor for a second, the simple investor, as we've talked about, just like the person who gets in a car and starts the car and just goes, they may not know or maybe even not have the capacity to understand what is going on, but they still understand the basic tenet that there is a need to invest for their future. Right? So these are the people that get in the car and go and don't worry about things. They fill it up. They just follow the rules and they just know that they need to drive somewhere. How they get there is altogether different, but they know they need to get there. Now, the last one in the story, in this parable, is the child who does not know enough to ask. It's kind of like an ostrich who has their head in the sand, right? They not only don't know what to ask, like the simple son, the simple child, or in the story it's a simple son, but the simple child doesn't really know what to ask, what to do, understand it, but you know what? At least they're doing what they have to do. The one that doesn't know enough to ask or how to ask, not only doesn't know, but doesn't want to know, right? That's a whole different realm. They don't want to know, and they decide that, well, they're unable to act at all because they just are frozen. They're paralyzed, they're stuck, and they don't want to get unstuck. These particular investors in this fourth child, they don't want to know the facts. They don't believe in the truth. And they're constantly having a internal dialogue and a fight with themselves that presents in a way that causes them to be just absolutely uninvolved. They have no ability to look at their own behavior, look inward to understand what's happening, and even face up to the fact that they need to help themselves. Now, if you think about these four, at some time or another, all of us may have attributes of one or more as investors. In life too, but I'm talking about really trying to focus and bring this to us as investors. There's a reason for this. Because I want to challenge you today. I want you to think about looking inside, not only for today, but over the future, as to which one of these you may be, or what components of each of these you have inside of you at every time that you're trying to make a decision. Which particular personality trait are you exhibiting when you're posed to make some kind of decision? When you're coming up with some information, whether it's about the economy, whether it's about earnings, whether it's about a company, aside from the fact that you may have a predisposition for liking or not liking a particular name because, oh, I didn't like the ice cream at that place, therefore it's not a good company. Knowing which one you are can absolutely make you a better investor as long as you can recognize who you are. If you really need to know all the details of the information, well, get the details of the information and then make a decision. If you are, unfortunately, the fourth child, the one that doesn't know what to ask or how to ask, and you're just simply hiding away and avoiding, maybe you need to stop for a second. And even if you can't do this, try to do this. Acknowledge that, yeah, that's me. I haven't been able to invest since 1996 when I saw the markets were changing dynamics. And, you know, since then, I've been missing out on all this. Oh, well, the good news is I also missed out on the crash of 2000 and 1987 and 2007. And okay, I get it. I'm not asking you to come up with rationale of why you did something and try to retrofit all the things that you do today back to that rationale. What I'm telling you is that, you know, we know that the path of financial freedom has in it the need to a degree to invest in something. Now, of course, you can be investing in a company of your own and making billions of dollars just in that one company, but that's not really what I'm talking about here. What I'm saying to you is you're listening to the show, you listen to podcasts, you read information, you want to learn, you want to do better. One of the things is to do is to understand who you are as an investor and invest accordingly. If you are anything but, let's just say, let's throw out the wicked for a second here, but let's talk about the wise, the simple, or the one who doesn't know what to ask. Maybe what you should be doing is working out what makes you the most comfortable, what makes you uncomfortable, and understanding what you could do on your own and what you need someone else to do for you. I'm not necessarily pitching my services here for you, but think about it for a second. If you can't do it on your own, get some help. Enlist the help of somebody, friends, family, or professional. Because you don't want to end up being like the fourth child, the one that just can't ask and doesn't do anything and paralyzed and unable to do anything, just stuck. Because you're probably not going to get ahead. I was also during Passover thinking about the bigger story, the overriding story of Passover. And I was wondering at the same time, this is all happening on Friday night as we're going through the Passover Seder. We drink a lot of wine. We eat a lot of food. We do a lot of talking, a lot of discussion and retelling of the story. And I was thinking about the overriding story where Moses was involved. And I was thinking at the same time, as I was thinking about these children, what type of investor would Moses be? Now, Moses, if you remember the story, he fought the establishment for what he thought was right. Of course, he has some divine intervention, so that helped out a little bit with all of this. But he struggled to eventually reach his promised land that he was looking at, right? And he brought the people that believed in him to that point. So let's go back and relate this to investing. Let's talk about what we talk about here. Moses would have known that investing is a struggle. It takes a long time to reach your goals. And there's a lot of adversity. But if you're Moses, you would have said, you know, I have my eye on this goal and I'm going to stay the path. And but I believe that good things will come of it. I mean, he was in the desert for 40 years wandering through the desert. It takes a long time to get through that. It takes a lot of personal conviction to keep up the belief. A lot of times there's a lot of doubt. And the story tells that, right? If you know the story. There's some good times probably in the desert. There were some bad times in the desert. But if you keep your eye on the goal, just like there are good times in the market and bad times, if you look back historically, and I'm not an advocate for buy and hold in any circumstance, you know that about me. I mean, that's not how we run our portfolios. You have to be tactical. There's no necessarily a straight line. I'm sure that this wandering that Moses did in the desert wasn't a straight line. There was a lot of times you had to stop, you had to rest, make a little left, make a little right. You know, I mean, there's a lot that goes on in this process. But just like the 40 years in the desert and keeping the eye on the prize, the Holy Land or the promised land, the land of milk and honey, investing is similar. Because it takes a long time and there are a lot of ups and downs, a lot of adversity, a lot of concern. There's a lot of times that things aren't going your way. But you know what? That doesn't mean that should stop you. Markets throw a lot of doubt your way. But understanding that long term investing, there is the innate I don't want to say direction, but there's the innate process of how markets are built and how markets are built on companies and how companies want to do better and profit and how you can participate in that profitability over time. Not in every single company, of course, but just over time. And it takes a long time. But if you understand that there is a path, and again, depending on what your goals are, but if you understand there's a path, it should keep you rooted in the belief that markets are one of the best ways to achieve financial independence over the long haul. And I would bet that Moses would agree if we know anything about how Moses was able to stick to his beliefs and persevere through incredible amounts of adversity. So I just thought those two stories were really powerful when I related it back to who we are as investors. You, me, everybody as investors. You know, we know that there is different types of investors. We know who Moses was from the story, and we know about the adversity. And there's a lot of adversity. There's a lot of negative talk and a lot of negative think. And aside from even self-doubt, there's a tremendous amount of things that are slung at us from the markets, whether it's political issues, whether it's earnings issues, whether it's economic, whether it's news headlines, whether it's investor sentiment and all the things that come into that, all these terrible things that are out there. But again, if you look at the charts and just simply do a monthly chart of the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial, the Wilshire 5000, whatever suits your fancy. But look historically where markets have gone over time. You could probably pick a time and say, well, that wasn't a good time to invest. That wasn't a good time to invest. But I do believe that if you look and you really think about it for a second, you probably look and say, well, really, going backwards, it's always been a good time to invest. And that's some of the underlying philosophy that's brought markets into what I've been calling, and I recently wrote about, as a matter of fact, it's over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, the latest Horowitz & Company market commentary, economic market commentary and outlook. I talked about one of the lesser known discussed items that helps to move markets, and we're titling it market mechanics. That's what's going on here. The basic mechanics of markets help move things from bottom left to top right over time. And that's why historically, if you think about it, if you threw a dart at any particular date, going back more than 1 year, let's say, but going back historically, it's been an okay time to invest broad-based in the markets. You have to be tactical. If you're investing in stocks, you need a little bit more of research that goes on with it. But going back to the point of sticking your head in the sand and not investing because you're just either paralyzed out of fear or it just doesn't make any sense at all. There are going to be good times, there are going to be bad times. But again, and I'll finish with this, keeping your eye on the goal of financial independence or retirement, college education, whatever your particular goal is for the reason that you are investing, that's where you keep your eye on. The intermittent noise that comes from markets, the adversity that's thrown at you, the self-doubt, all those are important and keep you in check, but realize that they're not, none of those are permanent. We have to keep our eye on the goal, which is a combination of investing and at the same time, protection. Protection from the downside. Being smart to understand when that is potentially occurring and when it's not. But making sure that you don't have a head full of sand and a non-desirous personality and philosophy of just not getting involved. That's just not the way to play this. All right, let's move along. Hopefully that made some sense. You know, it's hard to really describe the philosophy and bring some of these things. And hopefully it did come across correctly of what I was trying to bring across. So let's talk about some things that are coming up next week, as well as what we're seeing right now. I think the first thing I want to mention to you is the yield curve. There has been a lot of concern over the yield curve inversion. And I'm one of those that say that, you know what, this is a concerning point because it is time probably with the valuations of where they are, with economics looking a little bit poor around the world, that we may want to consider lightening up on some of our positioning in areas that will be, see the greatest effect from this and on a downside basis. So there's that, number one. And then the second thing is that what we're finding recently is that pressure on the inversion is starting to lighten up a little bit. Not a lot, but still it's still tight. Let's just say it's all very tight right now, and it can go either way. It can resolve and totally free up and stay that way, where there is no longer an inversion permanently, or at least from some time to come, or we're just going to dip down into that inverted curve and it's going to get worse. And I would say that the Fed is very much concerned about this, watching it very carefully, and going to do their best to avoid a continuation of a yield curve inversion. But it looks like the concern of this is starting to abate a bit, and investors are getting used to it. This is what happens. At first, there's panic and fear, and then all of a sudden, everybody gets a little bit used to it, saying, okay, we can live with this. Kind of like the tariffs. In the beginning, it was like, no, it was denial. Nah, tariffs not going to be a big deal. Then all of a sudden, we got into, well, you know what? These are a big deal, and it's really going to hurt us economically, and where are we going to go from there? And now we're in the, it's here. How much worse can it get? That's kind of where we are. That's the start to the end of where this is. Reality is going to hit soon with, oh, wait a minute. They did hurt. And look how it is impacting in earnings and economic growth. And how long is that going to be? And you know what? Maybe we need to be more aware of this. So we're kind of in a denial phase right now. We're in a hope and denial phase right now. That's where we are. We're in a denial phase that, it's how much worse going to get. But in a hope that it's only going to get better in the future. That's the whole point of why each time the China deal is announced and headlines come out about this, that markets seem to, bounce a little bit. We're also seeing credit spreads tighten significantly, and that's good. The spreads. What I mean by that is the spread between, let's say, a 10-year treasury and a 10-year high-yield bond or a lower-rated corporate bond. And when you see that spread widen tremendously, what you find is that there's really a lot of concern in the area of the ability for companies to pay off their bonds. Specifically, those companies that we're talking about here are below grade rated, high yield, junk, below investment grade. And when we see that starting to hit, when we see that there is a hit to those bonds and the differential in the credit spread or the yield spread, in that, that's a time that usually there's some concern with markets. And where there's that concern, it usually spreads into the equity markets. And now all of a sudden, in the last few months, I guess the last 3 months since the beginning of this year, we're now seeing that there is a tightening of that. It could be due to investor sentiment, but probably a lot more due to the Fed's backstop that they have seemingly put on the markets. Economic indicators are still showing a lot of weakening. We noticed that the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index is now at the lowest point it's been since 2017. And the weakening in Europe is still persisting. In China last week, we saw that there's a bit of stabilization. That was good. GDP came in about 0.1% better than expectations. Still a slowing Chinese economy. Retail sales came in a bit better. Manufacturing looks like it may have stabilized in the latest readings. But we are still in a downtrend overall for all these indicators in China. And whereas when we see a dip in good times and we call it an aberration or maybe something that's against the trend, you got to say the same thing in times that are not good. So this could be an aberration. It could be just a quick stabilization off of these lows. But I would venture to say that unless something changes dramatically and very soon, we're going to also notice that there will be this continuation of maybe not necessarily a downtrend in the trajectory that we've seen recently, but you're going to see that the downtrend and the amount of overall slowing in China is going to persist. Now, this week coming up in the earnings market or the earnings area, we have, what do we have coming? Durable goods. We have durable goods orders coming out in the earlier part of the week, and then we get into GDP for the first quarter of 2019. Now, I've told you and I predicted we're going to see some serious slowing down. Expectations are about 2.1%. I would not be surprised if we see it a bit lower than that, and the potential for a sub 2% reading for quarter one. Now, will that happen? Won't that happen? It all depends on how these statistics get put together, but I just don't necessarily see how we're going to see anything much better than that. So keep a watch on GDP, and also towards the end of the week, we're going to be seeing the Michigan University of Michigan Sentiment Index, which has been falling a little bit. Now, earnings coming up this week, and what we've been seeing so far with earnings is that there's a bit of a mixed picture. We've been seeing some beats, some lowered guidance. We're seeing the beats on very much lowered estimates from the analysts. The outlook has been all over the place. There's been nothing really consistent with that. And we did see, for example, markets really, some stocks are being taken down with negative guidance. But look at Netflix, for example. They beat by 6 cents last week. They guided down significantly on EPS and subscriber growth. The stock was relatively unaffected. Yes, it fell about 7 or 8% after hours for a few minutes, but then opened up a bit higher the next day, ended down about 1.5%. But we're not seeing anything really significant with people saying, you know what, we're just going to throw it all out at this point. Again, this hope trade is alive and well. And I do think, though, with Netflix, what's interesting about that is that I just don't see a driver here that's really significant. And while markets are being kind and where investors are allowing for a miss and saying, you know what, okay, things in the future will get better, I think that Netflix is kind of vulnerable to the whims of the market. So now if we do see any kind of weakness in markets, we may see a much greater level of volatility to the downside with Netflix due to this recent report. And in earnings coming out next week, it's a big week. It's I'm looking at right now in my hand, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What is it, 9 pages? Yep, 9 pages of earnings coming out. And on each page is 10, 30, 180, 200 companies going to be reporting next week, including Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon. And this is going to set the stage for, I think, investor sentiment moving forward. Because Right now, we had the banks that reported, and we had some other miscellaneous companies, a couple of tech companies, some healthcare companies report. Those are doing very poorly. The healthcare companies are getting obliterated with the idea that we may have a single payer plan or a Medicare for all plan or something similar to that. But right now, we have the technology, which has been pretty much the leader in holding up the markets, the big names. And this is going to be a major week for them. So take a look at what's happening with earnings next week. And I think that's going to be an interesting tell on markets, especially because volumes has been pretty much anemic of late. And, you know, if investors start getting a little bit concerned about valuations at this point, you know, if earnings don't come in spot on and we're not priced right for that level, there can be some issues coming up. But we'll see how that plays out. Other than that, I hope that you do have a great holiday. And also, come and join me on Tuesday, where John C. Dvorak, myself, get together and talk markets and all sorts of interesting news items. We kind of get a little bit off track onto some things on that show, and that's called DH Unplugged. You can go over to dhunplugged.com. In fact, we live stream on Tuesday nights and also have a chat room at 9 p.m. on Tuesdays over at DH Unplugged. And about a little bit before 9, you can log into that and come join us and spend some time hearing us live talking about this. Also find it on iTunes, Spotify, and every other podcast directory that's out there. If you have any questions, of course, send them in to Ask Andrew. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And on the top there, there's a little area that says Ask Andrew. Click that and just send in your question, your concern, your conversation that you want me to have, something you want me to talk about on the air, guest suggestions, all sorts of things. Anything that's on your mind, I want to hear. This is a two-way conversation, and we're going to keep it that way. Until next week, I want to wish you a wonderful, wonderful holiday with friends and family, a great weekend, a great week ahead, and I'll see you real soon. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.